Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN, and we have a lot to discuss with Jarvis Greer, formerly at WMC Action News 5, but of course he does color commentary for the Tiger Football Radio Network, and then, of course, with Grizzbeat at Grind City Media. Now, he is on X at Jarvis Greer WMC. Jarvis, how's it going? Good to talk with you.
Good. Good to talk to you, Gabe Kuhn. I remember talking to you for an extensive period at one of the bowl games down there, a practice somewhere down in Florida for the Tigers. Remember that long time ago?
Yeah, was that before the was it before a bowl game, or was that my senior year before the American Athletic Conference Championship, that crazy 62-55 game?
Oh, I think that was it. It was down there in Florida. Yeah. We're getting ready to go to Florida for that. That was awesome. That's still one of the best games ever.
Oh, it was unbelievable. It was unbelievable.
Did that go triple overtime?
It was double overtime, and then we had like a tip pass pick thrown by Riley in the second overtime.
But we were rolling.
I still, honestly, looking back at the game, I still, like, when you look at the offensive statistics, I don't know how we lost that game. We went off.
There were like 3 million yards in that game. Anthony Miller and let's see. Oh shoot, what's his name? His folks have the Dodger dog. Tony Pollard. That's right. The Dodger dog down there in Whitehaven on
right
from Graceland. Yeah, that was just one of the most awesome games ever. Dylan,
yes.
Dylan Gabriel was quarterback of UCF then, right?
That would have been Mackenzie Milton. That would have been Mackenzie Milton, I think, in his final year there. I'm trying to think. No, the next year he got hurt. So in 2018 he got hurt.
Yeah. It was an awesome thing. It was an awesome place. The whole scene was just incredible at the bounce house, and we hit them hard early, and then they came back late, and it was just going back and forth and back and forth, and it was a great day to be a Tiger. And I remember on the hauler, the 18-wheeler it had three straight American Athletic Conference championship appearances, including the last one that was the title.
Yeah, they need to get back there.
Cincinnati.
How about that?
Yeah. Well, they have recruited well, and they've done very well on the portal. So, we'll see. It's a tough turnaround when you lose pretty much everybody you've had the last two or three years, especially at quarterback, which that'll probably never happen again, a four-year starter at one school, and Seth Hennigan. But, they've done very well. That quarterback room is going to have a lot of competition. And, you bring him back a couple of guys on defense, Cortland Marsh and William Whitlow, that were stars and studs there. Cortland Marsh, coming off injury, really showed what he could do there late in the season in the Tulane game, which was a party. That was fun. We took our whole family down, grandkids and everybody down there, and they were clowning on those people at Uelmann Stadium down there.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that.
Oh, they were having fun. My 9-year-old grandson was getting into it with a drunk Tulane fan. We were watching it. On one side of the field is pretty short. The stands are pretty short, and so we could see them out of our little broadcast location. And he was jawjacking big time with a drunk Tulane fan, and they were just having a great time. It was fun.
All right, I want to hop back into Memphis football in a second, but the athletic department just tried to make a big move today.
According to
Ross Dellinger, who was first to it from Yahoo Sports, Memphis put out a $200 million proposal to join the Big 12. This is the second sort of iteration of trying to buy their way into the Big 12. Way back when FedEx said Memphis, they would sponsor the title game as long as Memphis got in, they denied that. It seems like they're not overly interested. But here's what the deal is. Taking zero distribution for the final 5 years of Big 12's TV deal with ESPN and Fox, providing the Big 12 with sponsorships in excess of $150 million over 5 years. And right. then they added this, which is, I mean, they went above and beyond to try to make this good on the Big 12, good for the Big 12. Being subject to expulsion after 20, 30, 31 if the Big 12 deems that the Tigers aren't adding value. So they're betting on themselves with this deal, but it seems like the Big 12 doesn't have all that much reported interest right now. I've seen some people out there, because this is what we do now, we sort of pay our way into conferences. SMU set the precedent for that.
SMU.
And joining the ACC. I see a lot of people sort of look at this and shame it to a certain extent. And for me, and I want to get your opinion on this, this is not something that should be shamed. I feel like this is a above and beyond effort to try and keep yourself relevant.
Oh, they shame it unless it works. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that was a really sweetheart deal. You know, FedEx had a real big hand in that first one to try to get into the Big 12. The thing about it is Memphis did not have the structure that it has now. The Tigers own their own stadium, Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium now. They do have their own board, which they had to get out of the Board of Regents, and they're ready to go with that. They call their own shots now. They're not beholden to anybody else in the state as far as, you know, we want to do it, let's do it. See if we go out and raise the money. We don't have to get anybody's permission to raise the money. You can go ahead and do it yourself. And so that is a lot. That's a big, big, big change in terms of the direction that the university has taken. Plus, you know, they said, look, we want to do this. It didn't work with the Big 12. Tulane saw that. I'm sure they did. I'm sure they were watching that. They came up with the idea of paying all their own players. Of course, they're a private school. They don't have to show their, you know, you can't do a public records act and try to, a FOIA and try to get them to release their statement. But they were paying all their players at least $30K. And then they raised the money. You know, they got a lot of money down there in Dallas. We know that before from the Pony Express, right?
Yep.
And they got behind their program, and they basically bought their way into the ACC. But I do think since Dr. Ed Scott, who just signed a new completed his memorandum of understanding and signed his deal, you know, with the with big caveats in there, if you get into a power conference, that's more money for him, as it should be. And he's got ties going back to the ACC. I think that's something that, okay, look, Memphis is serious about this, and that, you know, we could be looking at, if this doesn't work out with the Big 12, they'll be turning their attention to the ACC, because the ACC has already done it by accepting Tulane's deal.
Right. SMU's deal. SMU.
SMU, that's right.
How heavily did they set a precedent? If you want to get into another conference – from the group of five into the power structure, this is how it has to be done now, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, they want money. I mean, they have totally wrecked conferences and you know, traditional matchups and all that, all for the sake of money. You say, like, Oklahoma is now, like, picked, what, 12th in the SEC? And they could have been at the top of the Big 12 had they stayed.
Right.
But they went for the money, and the money is long-term. You know, you win one title – and that could be it. But, you know, if you get that check coming in every single year, hey, that's worth pretty much everything. And so it's all about the Benjamins, as they say. And, you know, Tigers are serious. They're putting their money where their mouth is. I mean, you've been over there to the construction site.
Sure.
Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium.
Yeah.
It's coming out of the ground now pretty good. And it's like, wow, this actually might be pretty cool when you see, because, you know, when it was the Liberty Hole there, as we like to jokingly call
right.
it. You know, there was nothing. They tore down the old press box and the west side stands, and, you know, it was just kind of a big nothing thing there. But now it's coming up. The superstructure is pretty much intact. They're going to start filling it in here as the season goes along. It's supposed to open for real next year, next season. So I think that the university is being aggressive, and I applaud them for it.
What?
I also applaud the boosters and every other – what other corporations or whatever entities they had to get involved with this, because that means – if they're putting something out like this out, and Ross Dellinger and the other people are reporting
right.
on it, it must be something to it.
Yeah, FedEx and Lowe's are being very aggressive, and so is the University of Memphis, knowing that they have that type of support. Now, what do you make of the Big 12 not being overly interested in this? At least that's what's being reported right now. It's not like a hard no, but it is a we're not interested at this moment. I mean, considering that every conference is trying to generate as much revenue, and there's so. supposedly $200 million worth of revenue, and you don't have to pay Memphis out with the TV deal that you have through 2031. What do you make of them not being interested?
Well, like you said, at this moment, I think they put that caveat in there to say, so if this does happen somewhere down the line, that it wasn't a hard no, because I take it as that's not a hard no. They wouldn't have said at this moment. They would have said, no, we're not taking any other schools. We're not interested. The fact that this proposal is out there, and it's a proposal, it's on the table. And, you know, have they had a whole lot of time to review it and go over it? You know, they got to parse out how are we going to divide this money between the rest of the partners and the Big 12? And then they got to have some sort of meeting to have a vote on it. They just heard about it. And, like, on the surface, they say, well, we're not interested right now. Okay, that's what they're saying. Okay, right now. Which tells me that they haven't really had a chance to sit down and talk about it with all the member schools and all that other stuff.
You know, Jarvis, I got to say, though, I fail to see the overwhelming drawback considering the offer that's on the table for the Big 12. Right. No. If they say no to this, that I hate that. And I know we're sort of long struggling University of Memphis fans when it comes to getting into the power conference and the power structure, but that would be a depressing no.
Well, here's what I see. My wife used to work at St. Jude, and there's a lot of Baylor people that have worked at ALSAC, you know, the fundraising arm of St. Jude, people that went to Baylor that live here in Memphis or live in the area. And, you know, this is a big Southern Baptist area, and they would love to come to Memphis to play games and, you know, go to Beale Street and all that other kind of stuff. And it's not the Big 12 is the one league that makes the absolute perfect sense because we're right in their footprint, right? I mean, pretty much most of the schools are within a several-hour drive of Memphis. And you know, they'll come here, we'll go there. If Memphis does get in a league like that, it would be great for Memphis, but you know, I think it would be added value when you're looking at the Big 12 they're not the Big Two. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's, the Big Two is the SEC and the Big Ten, and everybody else is still kind of sucking behind you know what. And so I think that whatever other teams that are out there, you better grab them up now because that landscape is going to get pretty barren going forward whenever this next new TV deal comes out in, what is it, 2030 or whatever that is. So, you know, when the next big TV deal comes out, and I think everybody's pointing around 2030, that's when the last big shakeout for the next millennium is going to happen, I believe.
Yep.
And there's only so many teams left that could be worthy of a jump, which I would put Memphis in that category. UCF is trying now because they're building their own stadium there in Tampa. They got a huge market. Yeah, USF. And, Tulane maybe just because of New Orleans.
Right.
You know, they've been pretty serious in football now. They've had a really good football program here the last few years. And they're going to have to do something about basketball.
Yeah.
But maybe even somebody like UTSA. You know, they are not bad. I like their coach down there, Jeff Traynor and Traylor.
Traylor.
Yeah, and I like their coach down there. Their basketball is also horrible.
Right.
You know, they play in the Alamo Dome, so they got a good setup there. And you know, it's just like there's not that many programs left that would be worthy of of a jump. And I think Memphis would be at the head of that list. And if Memphis is saying, look, we want to join you and we make perfect sense for your league. You don't have to pay travel costs. You know, it's not, travel costs. That's what's keeping Tigers out of the pack. There's no travel costs assorted with this league because you're right there, right in the middle of it, right in the edge of it at least, and you're close enough where you can drive. Everybody can drive fan-wise, and it's a short flight. You're not having to go through two or three time zones.
Mm-hmm.
So makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, it does. If the Big 12 ultimately says no, and it's not just a not interested for now type thing, is what's been reported today, what do you think that no would come from? Is that like waiting to see what happens with the ACC, if some of those teams need a landing spot? Because, again, we are in a time of college athletic sort of upheaval where $200 million is a lot. So if a no comes, it would be, to me, an ultimate no. That just seems surprising.
I would say, you know, if any of those ACC teams make any kind of move, it would either be to the SEC or the Big Ten. They're not going to make a move to the Big 12 because that would be, in my estimation, a lateral move, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Yeah. But the Big 12 has done some good maneuvering, I think, the past couple of years with Brett Yormark. They're a lot more inventive when it comes to revenue generation. So they've put themselves in a decent spot as opposed to a couple years ago when we thought that they may be extinct. It was either them or the Pac-12. They made the Pac-12 go extinct.
Yeah. Yeah, but none of those teams are Florida State, you know, with the prestige of Florida State. Like USC, they're not going to a Big 12. They're going to the Big Ten, right? You know, they're going to make a move up. The schools that left, other than maybe, what is it? Which Arizona? One of those teams that caught. Oh, I'm trying to think. Utah. Other than Utah, like Utah could have gone to the Big 12. They got lucky that they got in where they got in. So yep. I'm not all that concerned with, you know, any kind of thing from the ACC, any of the teams, North Carolina, Duke or anything. Duke's not going. The Big Ten would be a spot for Duke to go, but too many of those people like Tobacco Road. That's why the Big East broke up. When Memphis got in the Big East, all the schools that play basketball said, no, we want to stay with our basketball traditions. We don't want any of the rest of it. And so that's why UConn went back to the Big East. And they even sacrificed their football team
right.
for the time being for that. So I don't think that, you know, who else? Like Memphis is in, I think, good standing competition-wise, equal value as an NC State. Or, you know, some of those teams like that, and can on occasion play a Florida State, even when Florida State is good. And that's one thing I like about Florida State. Back when Bobby Bowden was there, we used to play them all the time back when I was in school, back in the 70s,
right.
the mid-70s. And they would always play us. It didn't matter that and they kind of were halfway in the same league, although, you know, we didn't have a football league in the great Midwest. But look at the teams that were in there in the old Metro. I mean, that was South Carolina, Georgia Tech, Florida State, Cincinnati. You know, there were a lot of really, really – if they could have made the Metro a football league, it would have been a power league if
yeah.
those teams would have decided to do it. But I don't think that, you know, Florida State and Clemson, if they go anywhere, it's SEC or Big Ten.
Yeah.
And those teams are getting – those leagues are getting kind of unwieldy. But I don't think that – they could entice them enough. And you talk about Brett Yarmark making good moves financially. Well, what would a $200 million infusion of cash do to your league?
Feels like a lot.
And you get to add, you know, another $5 million to each team in the Big 12, you know, on their bottom line over 5 years?
Yep.
Hey, we get another, you know, however many, $10 million a year just because Memphis came in and we don't even have to pay them. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, that's and then boy the recruiting that it would do for Memphis would
yes.
just be off the chain.
And then again, I think revenue generation with ticket sales when you have home games instead
yeah,
of UTSA and Rice and all those schools yeah. coming in, it's Oklahoma State and
oh, yeah.
Utah and schools of that ilk.
Yeah,
and so then redoing, like, I miss Houston. I really do. That was my big rival in school.
They were nasty, and people hate. You know, that was a good team to hate. You went down there. You've been down there to that place, and they're pretty nasty.
Yes.
And so that'd be good. And so who would? And I think you know the Big 12 would take a Memphis and Tulane if that were the case. If you needed two to balance it out. It would make too much sense, but just for Memphis, it makes perfect sense for the big. But you know, yeah, we all want to jump into a bigger league. So, what sense does it make for the other league monetarily? You won't lose any money, at least for the 5 years you're getting that $200 million.
Yeah,
you know that you're using.
And then you have a potential out in 2031 if you don't think they're adding value built into the deal.
I think there would be total added value because you'd get a program that. You know, you can't say it's on the rise. I think it's risen already. This team is, you know, Silverfield's done a great job coming in and putting – he's been recruiting every year and hitting that portal hard, and the players have basically, you know, worked out you know, they've been up there pretty good now. And so what do they got? How many straight bowl games do they have?
It's 11 now. 11, yeah, I believe.
And just think, the crowds that you'll get at the Forum, you know, when you bring an Oklahoma State in here every year, you bring Houston back,
right.
You get sellouts. You'd have sellouts at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium for the football. So the league would make money off of that. It wouldn't be a bad draw because this is it may not be a Tampa TV market, but it's not a bad market. And plus, you get an inroad in the SEC, you know, in SEC territory, which I think they would like to do. You know, take some of that, all right, take some of those eyeballs away from the SEC because they'd be looking at, you know, at Memphis playing, you know, whoever in the so-and-so in the Big 12.
For sure.
It's something to think about. It really is something nice after all the terrible news we've had here lately. And will it work out? Who knows? But at least it's out there, and at least it shows that the university is being very, very aggressive in trying to, you know, they're putting their money where their mouth is, that's for sure, trying to get into a power conference.
No doubt about it. Now, I want to actually talk some ball. We opened a little bit on Memphis football, but I want to get into the quarterback lack of competition, I guess is probably the way to put it. Brendan Lewis
you
is going.
You think it's lack of competition?
Well, he's going to be Brendan Lewis, transfer from Nevada, is going to be at American Athletic Conference Media Days coming up this week.
As he should.
Yeah,
I mean, he's the only one in that quarterback room that really has played any meaningful football.
Well, given that, like you usually don't throw a guy out there that you don't know is going to be your starting quarterback to speak to the media. At Media Days, obviously, there's probably some examples from the past where that has happened. But do you view it as a competition? Just curiously.
Well, this is what I think. I do view it as a competition because, A.J. Hill, the hotshot rookie they got, the freshman that they got that they beat. Who they beat for him? They beat Florida State for him? They beat Florida.
Oh, they beat out Colorado and Florida, I believe.
Florida was the one that had the biggest, you know, that he almost went there. Until he got, you know, whatever Memphis sweetened the deal or whatever they did, they got him to come here. And so, you know, he's got all the tools. And then Arrington Maiden looked really, really good in the spring game. And he looked like he had total command of the offense. And, you know, he was a really big-time recruit when they got him out of Texas a couple of years ago. So, you know, Brendan Lewis is the one that's got the experience. He's been a starter. He was a starter at Colorado, had to transfer out because Deion comes in and brings Shadur with him. You know he ain't going to play in front of Shadur, right? Shadur Sanders?
Yep.
So he goes to Nevada and has a really, really, really good productive year, a couple of years. And, you know, it's been a while since we've had a dual-threat quarterback who can, you know, somebody who can run and throw. I think, he threw for more than 2,300, 2,400 yards and ran for almost 800.
Yep.
So that 800 yards, that's nothing to sneeze at. You know, that's going to be a lot of a lot of run pass option, a lot of RPOs with Memphis. But, like, he's got that. That doesn't mean that talent won't eventually win out as the season goes along. You know, he's going to be there to shepherd these young guys through. And if somebody comes up, they are ultimately more talented. And we'll see. We'll see how that goes. But, yeah, I think he'll be the starter. And I still think it's going to be a competition, though.
Yes, like throughout the year is what you're more paying attention
to.
If some of these guys come along and they end up being better than Brendan Lewis, may the best man win that job. Now, when it comes to that offense, Tim Kramsey's dealt with Seth Hennigan, a guy who throws from the pocket on a consistent basis past 3 years. This offense is going to look different. What I have talked myself into, Jarvis, is that backfield is going to be pretty dynamic. You have Sutton Smith coming back off injury. Greg DeRozier Jr., a couple more backs they added through the transfer portal, and Brendan Lewis with his legs. Now, it's going to be on Tim Kramsey.
Don't forget Botiford last year.
Yeah, Botiford.
Botiford, kind of like that running back that we had that we got from South Carolina.
Yes.
Kind of bowling ballish, but has a little bit of a – but is really, really tough and a tough runner in the trenches.
Yes, but Tim Kramsey has not really gone that style with the quarterback running a whole bunch. But it feels like this year they may have to pivot to a certain extent. Because I'm not saying the wide receiver room is going to be bad. They brought in C.J. Smith from Purdue. Brady Klus, as a freshman last year, looked good down the stretch of the season. But it's an unknown sort of wide receiver room pass catcher situation this year. It feels like that backfield could be a really dynamic, hard-to-stop backfield as the season gets going.
Well, as long as everybody stays healthy, and that's the thing with the Grizzlies too. You know, if you stay healthy, and that back end, remember Sutton Smith got hurt in the first series of the first game,
right?
Last year, and that's the guy that we all remember the Liberty Bowl against Iowa State, where he made three guys drop their jocks on one play on a 48-yard touchdown pass from Seth Hennigan. He's a guy that you can line up anywhere on the field. And, you know, you can put him at split back, you can run him at tailback, you can, you know, do any of that. So he is Sutton Smith. We call him Sutton Smith. He's got that sudden electricity. Then you, with DeRozier, I call that dude is him.
Yes.
Now, when he came on at the end of the season, you know, he broke his shoulder in the Florida State game after scoring a touchdown. He picked up a really big third down late in the game off a pass that he had to – basically,
it was the same. I think it was the same exact play they ran to score the touchdown to early in that game.
Yeah, it was. You know, and he broke his shoulder on that play, but he got the first down, and then he missed, 4 or 5 weeks?
Right.
And finally came back and was just dynamic down the stretch. And then, like you say, they got a kid in out of the portal that looks good, and then Makari Botterford is a guy that's kind of like the touchdown maker that they had last year. You know, they brought the kid in. All he did was score touchdowns at the goal line.
Yep.
But he can run upfield. He looks like – reminds me a lot of the back that they had that got out of South Carolina that was really, really good and a tough runner. So they got that, I think, taken care of. That's the only position that, you know, you got a lot of returnees at. Up front, what do you think about their guys up front now? That's where it's really going to
– They lost a few, really, but they gained a few. I don't know, Jarvis. I think you can talk about this with Memphis basketball as well. It's just the lack of continuity you don't know until they actually run out there for the first time, ultimately. Yeah. But I think I feel good about the pieces. You still have Chris Adams at left tackle. He's a guy who's picked, you know, by a lot of magazines, first team, all AAC. I feel like they have the makings of a really good offensive line. And I thought they were one of the most consistent pieces a year ago. Now, a lot of new faces, but I don't know if they got the credit last year for how good they were on a consistent basis.
Well, that's how you allow your quarterback to not get touched that much. Seth Hennigan didn't get sacked, and he's not the most mobile dude in the world. They ran for a lot of yards. I mean, if you give the back the ball, they usually had a crease or a hole to get through and get something done. And but that's also why it's good to have a running quarterback now. While they figure it out up front, at least you got somebody that can get out of trouble, right?
Yes.
And so we'll see how much that works that way. Defensively, you bring William Whitlow Jr. back. I think that's really big because you got to rush in a guy that can get in the backfield and do some damage defensively there. Cortland Marsh, I think, is a secret weapon.
Yeah.
Because he was hurt most of last year, but when he came on at the end of the season, I mean, that Tulane game – I really like going back to that game because that was fun beating him down there.
Yeah, and Jarvis, you know about the DB position. He is a very versatile safety. He can come play up in the box, and he can also cover. Like he's a fun player to watch going into next season.
He's somebody that the other team is going to really have to key on. Now, other than that, I think that the whole linebacking core is going to be new, and so we'll have to see how they mesh together. But I think they got one kid, and I cannot think. Call his name right now that has all-star potential.
Sam Brumfield is a guy that I really like in that linebacker room.
Yeah, yeah. He looks really good there. So, but the one thing that I really like is the fact that a lot of these guys that they got out of the portal and a lot of guys that they redshirted have played somewhere and Silverfield plays a lot of people. Just because you're not the starter doesn't mean you haven't played. You haven't logged some plays, and some of those guys are, I think, have a chance to be really good. I got to talk about the wide receivers really quickly.
Yep, sure.
Brady Clouse, I think he's a bigger version of the kid they had playing that position last year and more athletic that finally graduated. You know, the kid, he was a former walk-on.
Mm-hmm. Kobe Drake.
Kobe Drake, yeah. And everybody likes you, if you're a Tiger fan, you know Kobe Drake. Kobe Drake, you know, was kind of a smallish receiver, walk-on out of Arkansas, came over here, earned a scholarship, got bigger, stronger, got a little fat, caught everything.
And ball. I mean, he was great. He was great for a good 3-year period.
Everything thrown in his direction he caught. Kobe Drake, God bless his name. Now, you go along with Clouse now, taller, longer, more athletic, more speed. You put that in that position, and now the speed. That's one thing I think this wide receiver group has that last year's did not. More of these guys got really good top-end speed, and that's, yeah. I think that's one thing that limited the Tigers, who really had a good offense last year, but it limited them in the fact that you only had one guy that you could go over the top with. And yep. Now they've got like three guys that can do that, that really have that flat end speed. So yep. I think that's one thing that'll help. You can always send somebody on a streak, and if somebody goes to sleep, boom, he's out there. And as long as we can get them the ball, they catch it. You know, that's one thing. Man, I go back to the days when we couldn't throw the ball and we couldn't catch the ball. Right. You know? And that was, those are the old – I'm not going to mention the coach's name, but you know who I'm talking about.
Right,
and,
right.
Because he was a great player for the Tigers. He was a great player for the Tigers. And they took a chance on him, didn't work. And then we had some periods where, hey, we'd go upset somebody and then we'd lose to somebody that wasn't any good. You know, those are the days before you got here. And that's it. Gabe Kuhn, when you got here,
yep.
man, it's
yep. I had my 1-3-9 year in the Big East, and then it became the American Athletic Conference, yeah. and we won 10 games. So, all those things you're talking about, ancient history, Jarvis, ancient history.
Yeah. Well, the history here lately has been really, really good for the University of Memphis athletics. It's for the football team. And that's, you know, of course, I played DB there a long, long time ago, and we had a lot of guys that went to the pros. We were not in a league. We played as an independent, but we played an SEC schedule. I mean, we regularly played Mississippi State, Ole Miss. We played Tennessee every other year. Every third year we would play them. Then we played Georgia Tech. We played a lot of teams in the SEC and other leagues, because back then it didn't matter what league you were in. You could play anybody, and they would play you.
And by the way, that's ancient history too. Yes.
Yeah, no, unfortunately. That's why I've always liked Florida State, because they've always played us, and it didn't matter if they were great. Well, they were once Bowden got there, they've been great. But it didn't matter what our record was. We could be good, and they'd still play us. And I remember we went down there with a team with Tim Harris on. Remember Tim Harris? Everybody knows yep. Tim Harris. Went down there, and they beat us 10-5 at Doak S. Campbell Stadium. We got a safety on them to start the game. Tim Harris tackled one of their quarterback in the end zone. And then they scored a touchdown. Then I think we kicked the field goal. We had the lead or something rather going into the fourth quarter. And then they got a late touchdown and won. That's what it was, yeah. So, I mean, they would always play us. It didn't matter. And they came back and played us again. They had a big kicker. I don't know if it was Janikowski. Remember Sebastian?
Yeah, yeah. I think it probably was.
Yeah. This is back when Ray Dempsey was coaching the Tigers. He was the one they brought on after Rex Dockery was unfortunately killed in that plane crash. And that team that Rex had built, you know, they went 1-10, 1-10, and then when those guys had grown up, they went 6-4-1, playing basically an SEC and ACC schedule. And they were beating people left and right. And they go and they're playing Florida State at the Liberty Bowl at the time. Memphis was down on Florida State's 2-yard line with a 4th and goal. And everybody said, kick the field goal. You'll be up 7. That way they got to get a touchdown just to tie you. And, you know, time's running out. And they go for it. And they got it. And it was deflected in the end zone. So Florida State comes back 45 seconds on the clock. And Sebastian Janikowski had been kicking 65-yard field goals in the pregame, right? And they come out, they march down the field, use the sideline, and he kicks a 55-yard field goal to tie the game as the clock expires. And it's like, oh, my, Jack Eaton, who I was announcing in the booth with him at the time. God bless Big Jack. He's in the great press box in the sky. And he had an absolute fit. What are we doing? What are you doing? Why are you going to do that? It was crazy. I thought he was going to have a heart attack right up there in the booth.
Right.
But, you know, that was some crazy. And they played Herschel Walker in Georgia down in Sanford Stadium between the hedges. And Herschel Walker had to have one of those moonshot, you know, goal line, leap over everybody touchdowns to beat us 13-3 in a game down there in Athens. and Ray Dempsey, God in heaven. There were so many people on that team that left after that were great players. And it's just one of those things. You know, this program can be really, really good, and it can be a consistent winner, as we're seeing right now. Just given the opportunity to get on the big stage consistently, I think people would be very well pleased with what they see out of the blue and gray.
100%. 100%. Well, I'm looking forward to season. I know you are as well, Jarvis. I appreciate you joining. Thanks for hopping on.
Hey, man, fun times. Grizz got a win last night.
Yeah.
Good. I think that little guard they signed is good as a third point guard. That's the third point guard on a two-way, Javon Small.
Yep.
I think they'll eventually give that two-way to Mayshak. Because at least he can play defense. I'm not a big Tennessee fan, but, you know,
but
he can play.
Yeah.
Hey,
Good things come out of Tennessee, too. You know.
Yeah. This is the NBA now, so all comers. We'll take them all if you can play.
For sure.
And I thought that was a great pickup, P.J. Hall, to get that big man two-way. Because he's a big guy that can play back to the basket, pick and roll, and he'll stick his nose in there. And Tiger fans, remember, he ain't scared.
He'll trash talker. He'll go back and forth with you, for sure.
So I think that'll be fun.
Yep.
All right.
Well, Jarvis,
thanks
appreciate
a lot,
you,
Gabe.
Man. Yes, sir.
I appreciate it. Okay.
He is Jarvis Greer. Formerly at WMC Action News 5. Also, make sure you follow all of his work with Grind City Media right now. Since his retirement from WMC, he's been all over Grizz Beat every single week. Just go to YouTube.com and type in Grind City Media. You can find Grizz Beat there, and Jarvis gives it to you every week. Now let's go ahead and grab a break on that note, and we will come back and blitz.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Now, the biggest stories overloading the line. A bull rush of info. It's Gabe's Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN, Memphis' sports station.
All right, Gabe. Marcus Smart signed with the Lakers after being bought out by the Wizards. The deal is 2 years, $11 million.
Good value, and I think they found good value with all three of their main signings this offseason. DeAndre Ayton, they got him on the cheap because he was bought out by the Portland Trail Blazers. Marcus Smart, he was bought out. You get a 2-year, $11 million deal on him. And then Jake LaRavia, 2 years, $12 million, $6 million a year. That's not anything to worry about. I think he has his best ball in front of him. And I think getting with J.J. Redick, getting with that team, I think he'll be very solid. I have my doubts about the Lakers. The LeBron back and forth and the questions about if he's still bought in to being an L.A. Laker, they remain. I want to see how him and Luka Doncic sort of get together this offseason and, you know, put those things behind them. Because we saw on the floor when they were playing together, they were a lethal duo. I think what the Lakers have done this offseason is actually useful. Do I think they're a better team than they were a year ago? Not necessarily. But when you look at the defense that they added on the perimeter, Marcus Smart, Jake LaRavia, you still have Jared Vanderbilt there. I think they got better on the defensive side of the ball to sort of help alleviate some of the concerns with that starting lineup with Luka, LeBron, Austin Reeves not necessarily being an unbelievable sort of defensive trio to run out there. So I like the Lakers. I think that they could be a lot more dangerous if they get DeAndre Ayton at the center position to just truly lock in like he hasn't in his entire career. But we're going to have to see if that comes to fruition.
Yeah, I think that Marcus Smart is really good value for the Lakers. And, you know, if they were getting him on the deal that he was previously, I wouldn't say that was good value, but getting him for basically $5.5 million a year makes sense.
People are, I think, have missed the point with a couple of these buyouts and signings in LA in particular, like Brad Beal, right? You have Brad Beal saying, like, what's he going to do for the Clippers? Brad Beal at $50 million per year for the Clippers sucks. That would be awful. Brad Beal at $5 million? That's easy.
Exactly.
The Marcus Smart at $20 million per year, that sucks. Marcus Smart at 5.5, that's easier to deal with.
Like, I think people need to grasp that very easy to grasp concept, because I've seen way too much conversation on social media and on the internet about these particular signings. When you get them on deals like they're on right now, they have a lot of value, even late in their career.
I think the Lakers have had a pretty good offseason. They haven't had a great one, but like you said, if DeAndre Ayton commits to actually playing hard and commits to showing up every single night and giving it his all, the Lakers could be a very good team in the Western Conference. They still have LeBron James, they still have Luka Doncic, and I think everything around them now makes sense. They have shooting, they have defense, they have a big in theory with DeAndre Ayton. I think it's a good offseason for the Lakers, and they should be able to at least push toward contention. And that's why I've been confused with how LeBron's been feeling. I understand that he's not the center and the focus of the team anymore. But overall, they've put a team together that might actually be able to compete.
Yeah. Like, the thing about LeBron's complaints is there was no easy answer with LeBron on the team to actually make yourself in that OKC, Rockets, Denver Nuggets tier. That was never going to be a possibility. I think, considering LeBron is still on that $53 million deal and they're dealing with, you know, trying to save money for a Luka extension, I think they've done pretty damn well considering those circumstances.
I also think one of the moves that is highly underrated, in my opinion, is Jake LaRavia. I think he's going to be really good for the Lakers next year. He's going to provide shooting, and he's going to provide defense, and he's going to provide a little bit of playmaking. I understand that they lost DFS, but having LaRavia and Smart to replace DFS is not the worst thing in the world.
And
you would rather have DFS, one player, but those two guys coming in to fill that gap, I think is going to work.
Yeah, and LaRavia, like, it's kind of funny. DFS is 32 years old,
yeah,
and you're paying him a lot of money. You get a guy who's 23 years old paying him $6 million a year when likely his best ball is in front of him. I don't mind that. I don't mind that trade-off.
Will Levis will be undergoing season-ending surgery on his right shoulder injury he sustained early last year before further aggravating it later in the season.
Let me ask you this. Was there any question about Cam Ward running out there week one on the road against Denver? Well, okay, if there was any questions, remove those questions.
Right.
Because Will Levis is not going to be a placeholder for Cam Ward because he's going to be out for the entire season. But I think it gives a solid runway and just an easier offseason heading into season for a guy like Cam Ward who needs to step in and show ability year one. Now, him showing ability, I don't know what that ultimately looks like. Just keep the interceptions down, make the plays that we have become accustomed to with your time at Washington State and Miami, be escapable, do things like that. And I think, you know, we feel good about where he's at. Does that equal an 8 or 9 win season? Not necessarily. If they win 5 games and Cam Ward has a decent stat line, you should still feel good about Cam Ward going into the future. But I've told you on multiple occasions, Connor, I'm not like high on the Titans going into next year. You can't be high on the Titans. They were the number one overall pick for a reason last year. But I look at their entire roster and the statistics from last year and the returning experience, and I think they'll be better than people expect. Not a playoff team, but if they got to 8 or 9 wins, I would not be surprised in the slightest, because I feel like most of their losses were one score. They had 7 one-score losses last year, and a lot of those were on the heels of a Will Levis turnover, fumble, you know, brain fart on the field. And I think you're removing a little bit of that with Cam Ward. And when you look at, like, you have Tony Pollard in the backfield off in a 1,000-yard season, you have Van Jefferson coming in at wide receiver, you on top of Calvin Ridley, Tyler Lockett comes in. You've tried to strengthen that offensive line. The defense gave up a lot of points last year, but if you go look at their statistics, they were third in yards allowed per game in the entire NFL. They just didn't really take the ball away. They didn't create a bunch of havoc plays, but they were very, very steady, and they got off the field on third down a lot. And I feel like they were set up very badly by their quarterback last year, who was turning the ball over on a consistent basis.
Yep.
So, like, this team has the ability, and they've made some signings this offseason, to at least stay afloat and look solid. And I feel like people are already sort of putting them at the bottom, you know, bottom of the league, bottom 3 teams, bottom 5 teams, whatever you define them as. I feel like they could potentially be outside of that if Cam Ward has a decent rookie year.
Yeah, when this news came out, my reaction was, oh, this has actually no impact on the season whatsoever.
Right.
None whatsoever, because it's Cam Ward's team now. And to your point, the defense was holding steady for the most part last year, but they always had bad field position because Will Levis would turn the ball over constantly, and that defense was always on the field. They were always having to fight because he was doing nothing with that offense. So hopefully Cam Ward can go in there and maybe steal them one or two more wins. We said last year that we thought the Titans were going to be scrappy, and they absolutely were, but good Lord, we did not expect him to be that bad.
Yeah, well, and what we always had a caveat. If the quarterback plays okay, limits turnovers, they can win 8 or 9 games. Obviously, he didn't do that, so they didn't win 8 or 9 games. They won 3. But I think going into this year, you feel a lot more confident in that position for obvious reasons. It's a number one overall pick as opposed to Will Levis.
Why do you think that Cam Ward has been so under-talked about heading into the season? It feels like he's the most under-talked about number one pick we've had in a very long time.
Yeah, I think, one, like Nashville and the Tennessee Titans are not like this massive market for the NFL. I also think that it was when we look at the draft, we knew where he was going to go. We knew he was going to be the number one overall pick. So we removed all the mystery and all the conversations around it. So I feel like that's part of it as well. It was Shedeur Sanders and Jackson Dart.
Fun fact, you can't get pregnant every day. You're only fertile for 6 days, ovulation day and the 5 days leading up to it. Natural Cycles is the only birth control app that can pinpoint your fertile window by analyzing your hormone-driven temperature trends. It's more than just a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Travis Hunter.
Travis Hunter and Jalen Milroe, those were the conversations around the NFL draft. Cam Ward took a back seat because there was no mystery to it, right? So I think those are the two main reasons, but I'm curious to hear. I mean, if anybody else has ideas, I will hear you out. All right, now we have one final break left in the day. We'll go ahead and take that now. When we come back, we'll rewind and wrap up this Monday edition of the Gabe Kuhn Show next, right here on 92.9 FM ESPN.